With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
We're rolling, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Bet365. Manchester United are up against Arsenal this weekend. Cardiff face West Ham, and Palace play their old rivals, Brighton.
Daddy.
Oh, we've had some football this week, haven't we, lads and lasses?
Wow.
Anyone footballed out?
My goodness.
Never.
My
PSG, huh?
Goodness. Well, Jim, hang on a minute there. We like to prioritise international football on this show, as you bloody well know. England, with another win. The She Believes Cup is coming home.
She's a.
Okay. What a win.
And fantastic. Phil Neville was absolutely cock-a-hoop. He said that he didn't actually expect to win it. He just wanted to see whether they were on the right track ahead of the World Cup.
That's a very Phil Neville thing to
and
say.
It is. And apparently it seems they are, but some big wins. Big win against Japan.
Ellen White, top scorer as well.
Yeah, some great goals in that game as well.
Thanks very much for coming. See you later.
Yeah.
We'll take everything.
Yeah.
See you next year. Love that.
Love that.
Love that indeed. We've got to start with Arsenal versus Manchester United, purely for the fact that what Manchester United did in Paris.
Yeah.
It was unbelievably.
It's incredible, isn't it? Like, we were talking earlier, like, the one kind of blip that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has had since his incredible reign has been that they lost that first leg and it looked like they would go out of the Champions League, and he just rubbed that out.
They're already calling it a reign. He's calling it a reign.
Oh, yeah.
The king reigns. The king is dead. Long live the king.
I mean, what I love about
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Indeed. What I love so much about it was that PSG obviously went to Old Trafford and it was kind of like, oh, back down to earth, lads. You know, you've had some winnable games in the Premier League. Yeah, there's the away win against Spurs and one or two others that you think, okay, fair enough, you've got good players, you can raise it. But when you're coming up against some a proper side there, you've come unstuck.
With so many injuries as well.
And then they go away with I mean, the players that they were missing. Now, I mean, even Eric Bailly came off after 36
minutes. Which, by the way, was a good thing, given how he started.
True enough. That was
it's like someone had it instilled in him, the spirit of Chris Smalling.
Well, then Chris Smalling had vital.
Chris Smalling had like Vidic in him. There's a sort of body swap comedy going on.
It was, yeah. Well, Alexis Sanchez has not been brilliant for Manchester United, but he was out nonetheless, and he would have probably started the game if he was fit, you would imagine. Herrera, Lingard, Mata, Matic, Martial, Jones, Valencia, Darmian, and Pogba was suspended.
There were so many videos on Instagram of the players who were terribly injured in their front rooms dancing around. Like, there were so many of them.
Yeah. It was incredible. I mean, they started with Scott McTominay. Now, some people may think that's a surprise. I mean, he was player of the season last season.
Yeah, have a bit of respect.
So
yeah,
it's about time he got a start.
That means the result isn't really that surprising.
No, that's
can you use, his full name as well, please?
Manchester United current holder of player of the season.
Jose Mourinho, Scott McTominay. First signing when he takes over at Real Madrid.
Absolutely, yeah. Fred Ashley Young was put into the midfield. Pereira was in there. I mean, the bits are containing Mbappe, Di Maria, Draxler, Verratti, Marquinhos, Thiago Silva, and Dani Alves. Okay, Neymar was out, but still, they were 2-0 up from the first leg.
Neymar's face on the bench. Take that face. I've got no particular beef with Neymar. I find him quite frustrating to watch, particularly in like a big tournament. But I understand he's a very talented player and the football world is richer with him in it. But take that face he had when that penalty was awarded and inject that directly into my veins. That's all I need. All I need is the air that I breathe and that. Because it was incredible to watch.
Yeah, I'd say something. Romelu Lukaku's having a lovely old time. And I think that Solskjaer's managed that situation. This is how I'm interpreting it. Because everything he seems to be doing is turning to gold, obviously. Lukaku wasn't in the side when Solskjaer took over. Lukaku wasn't scoring. He wasn't firing on all cylinders. I think Solskjaer, and as I say, I'm choosing to interpret it this way, deserves credit there because what he's coming, he's brought such a good feel-good factor there. Everybody's suddenly playing. Everyone's having a lovely old time. It's almost a bit like Gareth Southgate in England. But Lukaku wasn't playing very well. And I think Solskjaer has, you know, he's got probably put his arm around him or however he needs to manage the player. and has given Lukaku that drive and hunger, thinking, I want a piece of this.
Yeah.
I want to get involved in this side. And he's waited and waited, and now he's deployed him, and now he's scoring goals.
Well,
I wouldn't be surprised if that's the way it's played out.
I agree with your sentiment. My assessment is slightly different.
Okay.
My assessment is that he was playing under Mourinho, but he wasn't playing well.
Mm-hmm.
And what Solskjaer was able to do because of the situation, because he was a temporary manager, because it didn't really matter, because he didn't have to be in hock to these big money signings,
yeah.
Because he's gone in there and essentially the situation is, look, you've mucked this up and you've brought me in to sort it out. Mm. I'm going to do whatever I want. He's got the freedom. So he was able to leave Lukaku out.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, of course, it was much more difficult for Mourinho to do that because Mourinho wanted him. He came in for a lot of money. And
Mourinho
likes
that type of forward.
Of course. Mm. Almost like a defensive, especially away from him, like a defensive forward.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right in the second part of what you said, I think, which is that he's Lukaku has seen that from the bench and thought, you know what, I need to be a part of this big time.
And
Solskjaer's picking players on merit, which is obviously really important.
He just looks like a different player. But I think more than putting the arm round Lukaku, I think he's sort of saying, just hit the ball.
Yeah.
You know, take a chance.
Yeah.
Hit the ball. And look at how he profited from a spill from the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Lukaku of last season would not be doing that.
Well, he pounced on two errors.
Yeah, massively.
Absolutely. And I was really pleased for him because I think he's a fine player, but he's also a very streaky player. And he's taken a lot of criticism from people, you know, possibly fairly, saying that he's not quite that very, very top level. He's got obvious technical deficiencies in his game. And for the money they paid for him, he's not quite that level.
Sure.
And last night, he's played a huge part in a famous night for a really storied, traditionally huge European team, and he's etched a bit of his contribution onto the history of that club, which is really important for a player who costs that amount of money and really wants to punch his way through to the very top table. And the reason I say that is not to criticise him, but because when you talk about the finest strikers in world football, you might be forgiven for having Romelu Lukaku slightly below that.
Yeah. Yes.
But if he carries on, if he takes some his goals, take them through to a European Champions League final or something, you might be reassessing that.
Two of those around and you're away.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what he's doing at the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's phenomenal, isn't it? I mean, no one wants them in the quarters, right? Because there's it's a weird thing to say about Man United, but given the context of their recent seasons, they're a bit of a sort of unknown quantity. Because that feel-good factor is so energising for them.
Just to rub it into the PSG, if you were to say, right, you'll win away from home 2-0, and then the team you're coming up against is playing 4-4-2 with that lineup and all the rest of it,
10 players missing.
Oh, you'd take that, wouldn't you? I think that might be worse than the Barcelona comeback.
It's not as dramatic, but on paper it might be. But you know what? This week in football, and we'll talk a bit about Spurs in a bit, because it applies to them as well for a different reason, but this week in football, I feel like it's been about mentalities.
Yeah.
It's been, what Solskjaer's done really well is he's tapped into the tradition that United have in this competition.
He knows the club.
Exactly. They've lost their way a little bit. We all know that. But he's instilled in them a mentality which is, look, the same way Real Madrid have done, obviously they went out, but traditionally Real Madrid do this as well. This is our competition.
Well, Klopp does with Liverpool.
Yeah, the most famous nights we've had have been in this competition. Mm. And it means something to play for this club in this competition. So go out there and do it. Now, of course, on the other side of the pitch, you've got PSG, who've really struggled, despite all their money, despite all their input, and despite all the players they've got and the managers they've been through, to put their stamp on this competition, something they're desperate to do more than anything else. And I think the occasion last night, again, for however many seasons it's been in a row now, has got to them. And they've not been beyond the quarterfinal in this competition, I don't think at all.
Was it a penalty?
No.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was.
I think it was a definite penalty.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
But it's what I liked about it, and I said it before, I just like the fact that VAR added something to the occasion rather than subtracted, which it has done in every other occasion I've seen it. It added drama. Yeah. It added a little bit of that. Yeah. And it was a handball. He made himself a little bit bigger. Again, you won't have seen them given before because, to be quite frank, it was really quick, centimetres away from his body, the arm. It's a gutting situation for the player. But if we're going to bring VAR for decisions that are supposedly binary, this one definitely falls on the side of it's definitely handball.
Yeah, the rules about handball are changing, and they're changing on the day of the Champions League final.
Why do that?
What are the rules? What's it going
to
change?
You're allowed one handball.
The law is
as long as it's open palm, you're okay.
The law is changing to they're removing the word deliberate, I think. But also, everyone has to factor in the idea that we can see the laws of the game as they are presented, but the official information and guidance given to referees, they're not released publicly.
Yeah. Mm.
So when you hear things like, oh, he raised his hand, so he's got to go, which it doesn't exist in the laws, and we rally against commentators saying that, but that may well be given in the instructions to referees that we don't see. And I think the handball law is applicable to that, because it must be that they've been told if the arms are in an unnatural position, or as you said, Marcus, or Pete, the body's been made bigger, they give it for that. But for me, I feel like, We'll wait and see what happens with this new law. But for me, it feels like any time the ball strikes the hand or the arm, it's given as a penalty. And I don't know if that's the spirit of the game.
Rashford converted it well, though, didn't
he? It's a great... His first competitive penalty for Man United, that.
Yeah, he scored one in the shootout for England against Colombia. Yeah.
It's a great pen.
Which is lovely. I love Rashford.
But the players were in his ear.
I was so pleased for him.
Absolutely sledging him.
I love it.
Oh, man.
I absolutely loved it.
But
when
also,
he
wasted a ball in the first half,
didn't he?
And one of the things I really like about Rashford is he's a player that doesn't hide.
Right.
If something doesn't go his way, it doesn't affect him in the next time. He keeps his head very, very well. Doesn't get too sort of like emotionally led to the point where by trying to correct mistakes, he makes more of them.
It's really important for him. Likeable now. Like, it was
it's strange,
like,
isn't it?
You know, like, well, they've been through it. It's just like, oh. I kind of liked them in spite of Mourinho, because it was kind of like, oh, they're having to deal with this bloody misery guts every week. Yeah.
I never really had a problem with United. I had a problem when Mourinho was there, because Mourinho was essentially doing them a huge disservice with the way he was conducting himself and the way they were playing.
Yeah. But oddly, when Mourinho was at Chelsea, I think a lot of people quite liked Chelsea because of Mourinho back then.
Because it was more exciting, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's
but on the penalty...
Hard to besmirch Chelsea, though, is it really?
Well, one thing that shouldn't escape the notice is the role Lukaku played in that penalty, because Verratti tried to get over and intimidate Rashford, and Lukaku stood in the way of it, and Verratti took sort of one look at Lukaku and started walking back the other way. He just put his body in the way, and Verratti just didn't want to know.
The ref was at the cable, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I love it. Well, yeah, I mean, they are playing Arsenal, though. We can't forget.
Yes.
And Arsenal, we've seen them play pretty well at times against the big sides at home, apart from Man City on the first day, but that was the first day. It was a long time ago now. But they beat Spurs, they beat Chelsea impressively at home. Manchester United did beat them in the Emirates, at the Emirates, of course, in the FA Cup.
And they beat Arsenal well as well. Arsenal, other than City, have the most points at home this season.
Yeah.
But Man United have the third highest points away. So it's going to be really interesting... interesting afternoon, I think. And this is Arsenal's last game against the big boys in the league. So it's a chance for them to really use it. If they can win, that's a real springboard to finish strongly and just do everything they can within their own hands to finish in the top four. But either way, it's an advantage, because Arsenal have been playing very, very well. So if they can keep that up...
How do you think he'll approach it? Do you think he'll go for the jugular?
I think he would take a draw...
And
I
Emery?
Think, yeah, I think so.
It's not up to him, it's Mustafi.
Well, he's, okay, so you think he's the Emery's
I don't
not
think
gonna...
he'll set up for a draw, I want to make that clear, but he does like to switch out within games, so I think
will he go for them? Because when they played Chelsea and Spurs, they went for them.
I think he will see how that pans out in the first half, yes. Because the thing with Man United is they're such a devastating counter-attacking team at the moment.
A lot of players out, though.
Well, indeed, but they're still energised. And Solskjaer seems to be very good at keeping that going regardless of personnel. So I think he will approach this with a little bit of caution, actually, compared to a lot of those home games, because of the form United are in.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I agree that he went for Spurs.
Certainly not at Wembley.
They had double the ball.
What, at the Emirates?
Yeah. No, sorry, you mean the Emirates?
I'm very much talking about home games.
Fine, okay, fair enough. In which case, of course, you're absolutely correct. The thing I like about Arsenal now is they've started to defend a lot better. Last 2 or 3 weeks, they looked a lot. They dealt with Spurs pretty well at Wembley. I mean, Spurs had a lot of the ball, but apart from the mistake that Mustafi made, Arsenal looked pretty comfortable. And that's a real platform for them. I think that's a real boost to their confidence. Yeah. It's probably no coincidence that, with the exception of Bellerin, they've got all their defenders back now, haven't they?
Yeah.
So that'll be a bonus for them. But they're going to be without Torreira. So is that going to be a big miss for them, Jim?
Ozil's not in that role.
It is, but Torreira's
roll his sleeves up.
Torreira's been rotated heavily anyway, so it's no guarantee that he would have started. He's highly likely to have. But that is what it is, isn't it? And you know, Guendouzi's done a good job. He's a little too Guendouziastic sometimes.
Yeah.
So as long as he's on his game and he doesn't sort of try and overplay something in a silly position, which he's slightly guilty of, but he's 19, so you know, you've got to let him learn that himself. It's a loss, but I don't think it necessarily means that Arsenal have no chance.
I mean, they are playing tonight.
Torreira will, you would assume, playing that.
And Ren will take a lot of confidence from some of the other results. some of the other results they've seen. Man United are now 11-10 to finish in the top four. So £10 with Bet365 returns £21, including stake. And that is, obviously, along with the Man City-Liverpool thing, that's becoming a really exciting part of the Premier League season.
Yeah. Well, will we see Mason Greenwood get his Premier League debut?
Like to see it.
Imagine that is debut coming on in that game. Just see out the game.
Yeah.
Get us a winner. And Chong as well came. He's only made a couple of subs.
And that's really cool as well.
Two Academy players finished that game.
It's great because... that's another thing about Solskjaer tapping into the tradition of the club. He's not afraid to do that because he's probably grown up, well, he has grown up as a player watching Ferguson do the same thing.
Well, he managed, I don't want to say the B team or the youth. He's been
involved
in the
academy for a while. Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah.
It's like a Man United best of, isn't it?
I think he might have coached Pogba when Pogba was there.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, that was the big narrative when he joined.
Play when Pogba was there? I can't remember. Yeah. There's definitely a link there anyway.
They've met. I was going to see Eric and Sir Alex and Solskjaer together in a photograph. That picture getting a lot of hate online. I like that.
But do you know what?
I don't know how you can begrudge that.
Exactly. No. And that also taps into it. Perfectly. Of course, given what's gone on with Mourinho, Moyes, Van Gaal, where they feel like they've lost everything because they've been used to being spoilt for so long, to be frank.
Yeah.
Of course, if you're Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, it's a smart move to pose with Alex Ferguson and Cantona and let that photo get out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It links back to the past. The glory years.
Also, as well.
The squadron never dies, does it?
Yeah. The hierarchy at the club, they should just hang off as long as possible until they confirm him having the job.
Play Eric up front.
Just to
give him a run out.
I keep going. Keep motivating the
players. 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
So you compromise.
He retired at what, 31?
30, I think.
30, yeah. So how old is he now? 32, probably.
Yeah, I was going to say. I think, back on. Time.
Remember when he did that kind of, he had a fake penis in that film?
Eric Cantona.
He had a fake penis and he gets it out and it's gigantic.
Was he in like an Elizabethan drama or something?
Yes. Yeah. And I think he's like a notable, what would you call him, libertine, and gets the willy out.
Yeah.
All right. There we go. So that's why, whenever I see Eric Cantona in his later years, I just think of that scene, really.
Well, I think seagulls.
Yeah, same.
Speaking of seagulls, it's Crystal Palace versus
there
Brighton.
There we go. That's
the slightly strange derby is here. I mean, it's a derby, of course, that was established when Venables and
Mullery
were
in the '70s. Yeah.
But they've kept that intense rivalry.
It's absolutely mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's one of the stranger ones. But reading the history of it, it comes from a very sort of intense. At third division at the time.
Yeah. FA Cup games as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were in competition to get promoted, which they both eventually did. And they met in the Cups a few times when there were like thousands of replays if there wasn't a winner. And it just this bad blood built up and it's still there, and I love that.
Depending on how you interpret it, they've done well or been petty to hand it down through the season.
There are a number of sort of what you'd call non-traditional rivalries in football in this country, like Leeds and Millwall's one. Yeah.
Leeds and Chelsea as well.
Portsmouth had one with Crystal Palace for a while because we used to be in the same division for so long.
Okay.
And Pompey used to take a lot of fans up there because it's not that far, and vice versa. Mm. So it does happen.
Arsenal and Stoke and Birmingham City as well.
Yeah.
Ding dongs before.
Can we call it the Gatwick Express Derby?
Yeah, we should.
Yeah.
Because that's probably the quickest way to get to
the Southern Trains Derby.
Yeah, the delayed Derby.
Oh, someone's living
political.
In Brighton.
Yeah, political.
Well, Palace will be favourites, you would suggest, because, I mean, they're 3 points above Brighton, but their recent results and performances would make them favourites, I think you would agree. Obviously, got the home advantage. Brighton narrowly beat Huddersfield last time out. But
what's happening with Brighton? I mean, where are they going?
They've not been great, have they?
It's just, I think Houghton's in a bit of bother, personally.
It feels like they're treading water a bit, doesn't it?
Well, they're relying on Glenn Murray for a lot of their goals. And as much as we like Glenn Murray, he is, 35 or something like that? And, you know, they need to score. They need to be more creative. Defensively, they've been relatively okay. But I think, you know, if you're scoring a lack of goals, unless you're Sean Dyche's Burnley of last season or something like that, then it's going to come around. Whereas Palace have started scoring. That you look at the Palace front line, the options they have, Batshuayi coming in, the way he took his goal the other week and so on, you just think, if you have people who can put the ball in the back of the net down there, you'll probably get out. And Palace, again, defensively, aren't shockingly bad. They're okay. So you would have Palace's favourites for my money.
Brighton are just very poor away from home as well.
Yeah. they don't travel well.
They're a home team. Their home form is what keeps them in the Premier League. Going in, I don't know what it is now because I can't remember how they got on last weekend, but going into the game last weekend, they had got 1 point from 18 away from home. So, I mean, it's nowhere near good enough. Their home form is where it's at. And Palace, as you rightly say, Marcus, are in good form, aren't they? So,
they've got their tails up. Do you know what I mean? There's a bit of a feeling there. Palace have players. Now, I know Brighton have got a few creative players. I mean, Knockout was phenomenal in the Championship, and he's had moments in the Premier League and
of late as well.
Yeah, and Gross. So they do have some of their players, but when you talk about the likes of Zaha, I'll even throw in Townsend, who's still looking at, for that illustrious fifth Premier League goal
this
season.
He is on four.
And Batshuayi, as I say, has come in, and Milivojevic has produced some stunning moments this season. Palace have a few players that get you off your seat. Zaha being the jewel.
Oh, Wan-Bissaka as well. They can really get behind him.
Exactly, yeah.
Fantastic.
So when you have those players,
I think Brighton have made an effort to try and bring some sort of interesting players in, like Pascal Gross and David Proper, Bernardo, and one or two others. But I get, the thing is, that is always at odds with the reality of how you have to play in the Premier League if you're Brighton. So automatically, straight away, you're probably saying half the games we play this season can't really be very expansive because we're away from home and we're going to get beaten and we have to stay in the league. So it makes it a big ask for them. It's similar to when Lukaku was asked to perform that role for United under Mourinho away from home, which is a scandal given that it's Man United. Yeah. But people were criticising him for not scoring, but there was just no opportunities. He was playing as like a defensive forward.
Yeah.
So a lot of these players have to do the hard yards, don't they?
Maybe.
So that's part of it, I think. Yeah. The draw in this fiercely contested derby is 5-2. So £10 returns, £35 including stake with Bet365.
There we are. It's now time for emails with PDD.
It is time for emails. Actually, before we get there, Jim, you just did something very pleasing.
What was that?
You grabbed your belly and did this.
Did
Santa.
Like a jolly Santa.
Like a jolly Santa.
I didn't even know I did that.
I really enjoyed you doing it.
Have you got a stomach upset?
That's what I thought. I thought you got a stomach flu.
Do it again for the cameras.
Ooh. There you go. Evidently, I'm using that as a sort of stress ball.
It's nice. Say I'm the only bee
in your bunny. Not the bees! Ah! You've got mail.
Bad bees!
Say I'm the only bee in Jim's belly. Hi, chaps. Steve Hobbs here.
Burger.
Hang about.
Ramble Baker, Steve Hobbs.
It is him, isn't it? Steve Hobbs.
We haven't heard from
Not sure if you may remember me. I used to be the Ramble's official baker.
Still are, in my opinion,
so
Steve.
So this was a guy who, for people who have come to the show lately...
He's going to explain.
Oh, he's going to give a history. He's going to give a plotted history.
Hobbs, is thorough.
He's putting himself in the Demon Dice Hall of Fame.
I'll just sit back and enjoy myself.
Yeah. I'm the inventor of the Ramble Roll. Ramble rolls were sold in my bakery as a weekly special with a new filling each week. And remember, he used to tell us, or fill us in if you will, about which filling he was using this week in the Ramble Rolls. One week we even sold a pie as a filling. We did sell a few to some Football Ramble listeners. Most were sold to people who were going rambling in the countryside, who had no idea what a podcast even was, though. I love the Ramble Roll. I'm going rambling.
No one knew what a podcast was back then.
Sadly, I'm no longer a baker.
Oh.
As I sold the shop almost 3 years ago, so I'll need to relinquish my title as the official Ramble Baker. It is up for grabs, guys.
Vacancy open.
For grabs. Vacancy.
Vacancy open. Baker at thefootballramble.com. No, show at thefootballramble.com.
I'm now working as a sports teacher in my local primary school. One of my favourite parts. It's sort of village, this, isn't it? Yeah. The baker becomes the sports teacher.
Lovely.
Enjoyable. I'm really enjoying reintroducing playground football at break and lunch, bringing in rules such as win three games and you win the playground cup. So I want to be the official Ramble sports teacher, if that's all right.
Cool.
Yeah. Steve Hobbs, lovely to hear from you. Yeah. And we've met him a couple of times.
We did, yeah.
Lovely bloke, lovely wife, lovely old job. Hello to who we got? Aston. And yes, I am named after the club, but my middle name isn't Villa, which is enjoyable. Hello, Ramble, with the horrible Oyston family finally leaving Blackpool Football Club. Mm. It's fair to say the fans have been enjoying themselves over the past couple of weeks, with 13,500 tickets being sold so far for the first home game since the Oystons have left. In their recent 2-1 win away to Accrington, some fans inevitably took these celebrations too far. And threw a bottle at the Accrington goalkeeper, Dimitar Evtemov. Evtemov then proceeded to pick up the bottle and throw it back into the away fans to earn himself a red card, much to his disbelief. It's fair to say Accrington boss John Coleman wasn't best pleased about the incident. He looped it back, he didn't throw it violently, and yet it's him who is sent off. I think the ref should have used some common sense. Our keeper wasn't trying to endanger anyone. It was a human reaction. He's not trying to endanger anybody. Otherwise, he'd have thrown it overarm, not underarm. The rule has got to be changed. There's no rules.
He looped
throwing bottles.
He looped it.
John Coleman said a few weeks ago that because of some referee decisions he got in the FA Cup, he was thinking about quitting the game. So he's a very emotionally led man.
Oh, yeah. I remember the one. Yeah.
For the avoidance of doubt.
He looped it.
Possibly, hopefully, we're unanimous on this.
Right.
You can't throw bottles at fans.
No.
It has what happened a couple of times.
The guy who threw it at the keeper should be punished, by the way.
Yeah, he should.
Eric, you can't do that.
Yeah. What if he threw it underarm? Is that okay?
That's the thing. Sideways.
Yeah.
Oh, finally for now, Andrew Armistead, speaking of the recent David Beckham LA Galaxy statue, has pointed out that there is also a statue, there's basically a temple, a David Beckham temple in Bangkok.
Yeah.
And there's actually lots of little David Beckhams on the altar, which I quite like.
Wow.
Not great representation, it has to be said.
I agree with you. In LA Galaxy, I think that they're going to do almost like a, you know, like the promenade in Monaco. I think they're going to do a few statues. I don't think it's just Beckham. I think
like a Hall of Fame type thing.
Sort of.
Is it being funded by Landon Donovan Industries Limited? Is that where the money's coming from?
Hello? What you need is a Landon Donovan one on there. Bye. Over every day.
Well, I think also, though, they reckon that because of the new team in Los Angeles, I was reading about this, that LA Galaxy are basically
trying to get a bit of heritage.
We've got a bit of history, unlike yourself. And also, as my suspicions have been confirmed, it's not warranted to give Beckham a statue alone. So it has to be to do with all these reasons.
And it's interesting you say that, because Andy Brassel went for At The Match to LAFC.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere there was incredible. And you could tell, because I remember doing some reading around it at the time, you could tell that it was getting the Galaxy's back up.
Noisy neighbours.
The right squad.
There was this really sort of grassroots campaign to get people at LAFC, and some of the atmosphere that Andy captured on the episode is incredible. So I can understand why they're
so
stressed.
What I love about it, because in American sports you don't really have that kind of rivalry, because you don't have away fans and you don't have all this kind of stuff. So
it's very family oriented as well.
It is, yeah. So this is maybe quite a new thing over there.
I think they are. I won't speak up on behalf of all of them, but I think they're very seduced by the idea of the European ultras. Mm. They call themselves the ultras. Yeah. They take flares. They sing songs. Uh-huh. They have bands. They're really into that. But on the Beckham Temple, there's also, as Marcus and I think have discussed before, there's also a Church of Diego Maradona.
Jim's your man.
In Argentina, obviously, isn't it?
And it's got quite a few parishioners, right?
Do you know how you're initiated into the church? They recreate.
You have to give a fake urine sample with a tiny penis.
You have to score a goal and put the handball.
You recreate the hand of God. Where does this Beckham
little
thing end?
Little slugs. Little slugs, Marcus.
I think they did the other goal, but nobody was getting in. Dribble around a load of pillars. Ah, oh, for crying out. No, right, just do the hand.
But this Beckham
thing. Don't do the stuff about his hand.
How does it go from? I mean, where do we go from statue and temple? Like, is there going to be some sort of like Beckham Mount Rushmore?
I think satellite. Yes. I think satellite. Yeah. Geosynchronous satellite.
Yeah,
flies over.
I think an island state, maybe.
No. Like a tornado after him.
Yeah,
yeah.
In fact, why not here? We're an island after Brexit. Call it David Beckham country. Yeah.
Great Beckham.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, work.
Jobs are good and right. Let's go to an ad break. After which we'll talk about Spurs and Cardiff. See you in a minute.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
C'est ça, mon gars! Putain, le caractère! Le caractère! Le caractère, on m'a dit!
That was Anthony Martial going crazy in his living room. The character!
Yeah, I love that.
I believe.
Yeah, he wasn't celebrating that under Mourinho, was he?
He did when he left, though, apparently. Yeah. Southampton are playing Spurs.
Southampton, you see Tadic in the week? That's what you could have won, you little slug. Oh, Dusan Tadic. That's what he's capable of.
10 out of 10 in Le Keep.
Yeah. Didn't learn that at St Mary's, did he?
How many of them? Like, they've given out 8 in their history.
He was the ninth.
Ninth player, 10th time. Yeah, Messi's won it twice.
Nice.
Tadic, people were surprised he moves away from the Premier League. Well, he's let us know the reasons why, hasn't he? He wanted Champions League football, apparently. That was one of the reasons.
He's let his feet do the talking.
And my, he's got that Champions League.
It was absolutely beautiful, wasn't it?
I wonder if he regrets not being able to play for Southampton under Mark Hughes at the time, which is basically what it was.
All right. Dear. Any more digs?
I'll think of some more in a minute.
I'm sure you will. Well, Spurs themselves had a great win. Dortmund put them through in the Champions League, of course. Christian Eriksen said the maturity of the performance shows they've come a long way. And Pochettino spoke about his side needing to move forward to reach an extra level. I know what Pochettino means. I mean, Eriksen does talk about the maturity of performance and shows how far they've come. But there have been other performances this season where, I don't know if they're lacking maturity and whatnot, but they've fallen a little short.
Yes.
But through in the Champions League and a bit like Manchester United and Ajax and probably every other side, maybe no one will want to play against Spurs.
Yeah, indeed.
I just feel that I mentioned it at the top of the show in a slightly different context, but for me, I think you can make a pretty convincing argument that Spurs aren't the team they were a couple of years ago. They look a bit short in midfield, they look a bit short of fullback, and that's been the case for a while. But they are a mentally much stronger team.
Yeah, they're a better unit.
Of course they have situations where they don't always win, like the Burnley game would have been really disappointing for them, and obviously they were beaten by United and by Chelsea. But to me, that performance in Dortmund, and I was at the game at Wembley, the first leg, and they were great in the second half particularly, but that performance in Dortmund, that wouldn't have happened 2 years ago.
Got to weather that early storm.
Yeah, they did, and Lloris made some great saves in the first half hour particularly. They worked really hard, and they showed the maturity to do what was necessary to get through. And ultimately, as we saw when they were knocked out by Juventus, Juventus were just far too canny for them. Now, I'm not saying they would knock out Juventus this season, but they look like they've learned from their experiences, which will be really encouraging for Spurs fans.
I totally agree.
But they need to strengthen.
They need to strengthen.
I'd like to see them strengthen.
Nah.
No, three of us would like to see them strengthen.
Yeah. Well, Pochettino will have a touchline ban for this game, and then the game against Liverpool, they're given a two-match touchline ban, of course, for his behaviour towards Mike Dean. And I thought, you don't mess with the big dog.
No, you don't.
No.
Do you think
no.
touchline bans actually make much of a difference, though?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Not if Mourinho's the manager.
It's not even their touchline.
No, exactly. But what did you feel? I mean, I understand he was probably... I understand he was aggressive towards a match official, and not only that, match official, boss-level match official,
yeah,
Mike
Dean. Yeah.
But Jurgen Klopp didn't get a ban for running in on the pitch. He got a bigger fine, but I don't think he got a ban.
They are different actions, though.
Yeah. So, I just wonder which one you think is more serious, I suppose.
I guess they were both about as public as it could be, weren't they? Obviously, it's the fact that he's disrespected and, I suppose, undermined a referee in the eyes of the FA.
Yeah.
And they probably take that as
one was an act of aggression and one wasn't, I guess. Wasn't
yeah.
It? I mean, Pochettino looked like, you know, if you'd have ramped it up ever so slightly, he would have clocked him one.
You know, so he did that. He's banned for life.
But it was extremely aggressive.
Yeah.
You know, if you saw that in a pub, you'd think, hang on, it's going to kick off here.
Yeah, sure. But I think we all know, and let's not leave this unsaid, Mike Dean's played his part there.
Has he?
Yeah.
Apparently he said some really controversial stuff.
Supposedly so. Allegedly
so.
Off your pop, exactly. Yeah.
He's earned his stripes. Yeah. He's like a judge who can say what he wants.
Yeah. Yeah. But
Spurs, you obviously have favourites for this one. Since Southampton's loss at home to Cardiff, which was a really damning defeat,
yes.
If you remember
damaging
that one.
Damaging for them, yeah.
Very damaging indeed. It was a last minute or an injury time winner for Cardiff, and you know, they looked like their heads were dropping, and Hasenhüttl looked absolutely gutted and furious in equal measure. Well, since then, they've lost away to Arsenal. Well, you know, that can happen. They've beaten Fulham at home and looked pretty good there. They lost away to Manchester United, were unlucky not to get something out of the game. Their performances have improved. Ward-Prowse has been particularly good. The results need to follow the performances. So when you see them, Spurs away to Southampton, it's a tough one. But Southampton, there does seem to be...
There's a bit of a revival going on.
There is a little bit, but they need the results to come.
I think this will be a bridge too far for them, though, because Southampton haven't beaten Spurs at home in the Premier League since they were promoted in 2012. And obviously, it's been a hugely successful period for them. So they've been a bit of a bogey team for them. And I think Spurs, that win over Dortmund will put the win back in their sails, because they were looking leggy over those.
Jim, do you not think this is the same profile of game that Spurs struggled in against Burnley?
I do, but I think that's not representative of Spurs.
And does the European sojourn make a difference? Because they've been a bit light on in midfield, particularly. Like Eriksen, for all the stuff he said, he hasn't been in great form.
No.
Winks missed the North London derby and then obviously wasn't fully fit. And did he come off injured against Dortmund? He certainly had some sort of knock.
But they've gone from a North London derby to away to Dortmund to now this game.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering if it'll take its toll.
Well, it'd be interesting. I mean, Burnley are made of sterner stuff than Southampton.
Agree.
But Southampton need this, because if they're putting in better performances, which they have been in the last few games, at some point you need a result or two to come in.
And
otherwise, it can be disheartening.
And they're 11-4 to win this one. So £10 with Bet365 returns £37.50, including stakes. Should Southampton be victorious.
Yes. Well, we move on to Cardiff versus West Ham. Now, Neil Warnock believes it's between them and Southampton and a straight shootout for Premier League survival.
Sol Bamba.
Oh, yeah. It's gutting that Sol Bamba's out for the rest of the season and probably longer due to an ACL injury. But what do you think of Warnock's comments that it's between them and Southampton? So he said, well, Huddersfield and Fulham are already down. Now, That's fair enough. You know, so do you think that he is actually trying to put pressure on Southampton? Do you think that's what he means, or is he trying to get into the heads of those Southampton players?
He's a canny operator, isn't he?
He is.
And I can see there's no reason why, for some of the reasons you guys have given earlier, that Brighton can't be drawn back into it and Burnley. I think Newcastle are showing a bit, so that's okay. The only thing on the Fulham, I'm just reluctant to completely write them off after I saw them against Chelsea, because they did show a lot then. And they're going to have a lot more easy opponents to come than Chelsea.
Well, they have some creative players and people who can...
But they're 10 points adrift with nine games left.
It seems very unlikely now with Fulham. Yeah. And to be perfectly honest with you, this is the thing about the Premier League and the Championship. You know, watching Fulham in the Championship was glorious. Now, I know they don't... You'd be quite a strange thing if they got relegated and they went to Jovanovic. Do you fancy getting us back up again? But it was really, really great watching Fulham in the Championship. And when you were talking about Brighton, how, you know, they had to kind of change their game, and everybody does. Unless you're like a Wolves or something like that, or even a Cardiff, they don't have to change their game that much. They're more defensive, of course, rather than attacking. But someone like Fulham, you have to rip up the book and say, right, what are we going to do here? I wouldn't be surprised. Obviously, fans want the best for their club, and the best is to survive. So don't get me wrong, Fulham fans will be wanting to survive and stay in the Premier League. However, there will be consolation in the fact that, you know what, as long as it's not a disaster and you lose everybody and you know you're there for ages, you go down to the Championship, you regroup, keep some of your core players and whatnot, and get some results. It's not the worst thing to happen to you.
So in this chat of the Cardiff City West Ham match, should Scott Parker have been given the Fulham job, Marcus? Because we got an email on this subject, basically, which made me laugh. Dear Ramble, I just got back from seeing the wonderful Broadway play Hamilton and realised an interesting connection. During the play, the main villain, Aaron Burr, refuses to tell anyone what his political stances are, always sitting on the fence. I think I speak for all the listeners when I say, time is up, Marcus Speller, show your true colours or we'll be forced to revolt.
I mean, I think that's pretty obvious.
Rangers, Fulham, Man United, Aston Villa, Portsmouth, but Marcus's number one team is England.
Yeah.
In any age level.
Yeah.
Men, women, the whole lot.
You and James Horncastle. James Horncastle, underrated England fan. He loves England. He never talks about it because it's against his, like, it doesn't quite sit with his
European
aesthetic
credentials. Yeah.
I think with James, it was dormant. And then when we had the Ramble social
World Cup party,
England,
he went crazy.
Have you seen his tattoos?
I brought that out of him.
So extreme. His extreme bulldog tattoos.
A lot of bulldogs, yeah. Can I go back to the question?
Please. Cardiff
versus West Ham. At some point in the dim, distant past, you said, do I agree with Warnock? Do we agree with one?
Yes.
I think it's one of those four: Brighton, Burnley, Southampton, or Cardiff. And obviously, Cardiff and Southampton are in the most precarious positions. Mm-hmm. But you'd have to look at the running. I haven't got it to hand, so I don't know what it is. But clearly, those four teams are in trouble. And I think Newcastle, United, and Palace will be okay.
Yeah.
West Ham were terrible against Newcastle, and they obviously still won.
They've got a bit of that about them, haven't they?
I know what you mean.
But Newcastle were awful, but West Ham were dreadful. And if they come up against a team who've got anything about them, who've got any spirit or any drive to win a football match, in the form that they've been in last couple of matches, I think they're going to get a shoo-in.
Well, this is the ideal sort of fixture for Cardiff in a way, isn't it? Because they're at home, and obviously if they're gonna get points on the board, that's where they're gonna do it. And West Ham, they just have less to fight for.
Yeah, true. That's true. Declan
Rice, though, is the best English player ever.
Yeah,
currently.
Yeah.
He's obviously very good, but the way the plaudits are speaking about him is he's a real top player. But some of the other players are kind of a bit patchy. But they've got quality in there.
But I mean, Bet365 have Cardiff as the favourites to be relegated outside, of course, of Huddersfield and Fulham.
Right.
They're now 1-5 to be relegated. So £10 with Bet365 returns £12, including stakes. So Bet365 are saying that it's Cardiff are the favourites. But I wouldn't write the other three teams above them off either, personally. Pete's always pessimistic about Newcastle. And Jim makes a great point, which is that it does matter when you get to this stage of the season, when you've got teams that are safely ensconced in mid-table. I don't have much on the line.
Sean Longstaff, who's been a great light from the youth team this season, who's been kind of running things, he He's out for the season as well. Mm-hmm. So
very sad.
Robert Snodgrass has been charged by the FA for allegedly using abusive language towards UK anti-doping officials. They came to West Ham, the
what
club.
A target.
Yeah, and old Snodders, he wasn't tested and was not due to be tested. And I'd love to know what.
Hands off my way.
Yeah. Get your hands off that piss. What annoyed him so much?
I love this.
Do you know what it reminds me of?
That's all we've got the information wise at the moment, yeah. By the way. So if something else comes out, you know, we're going on that.
You know, when you hear of like Saturday night in some provincial town and ambulance has been called and they're trying to help a drunk person, yeah. That drunk person's friends start trying to beat up the paramedics. Yeah. You think, why are you doing that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll say no more. Because I legally can't say anymore.
Yeah,
I think Declan Rice is a really good player, by the way.
Good.
And I'm not alone in that.
We're all agreed.
And yeah, apparently he's very, very diligent when it comes to his giving his urine samples.
Right? Actually, Pellegrini said that he has similar mentality to that of a young Javier Mascherano, because I think they worked together, Pellegrini and Mascherano, at River Plate, maybe?
Didn't a young Mascherano bite someone?
Did he?
Or was he bitten?
There was definitely a biting incident when he was at
West Ham. He's talking. This is River Plate. This is before biting.
And do you know what? On the mailbag, on the concert, which comes out on Saturday, mm-hmm. which you obviously absolutely listen to, we did a bit of a young player special. And James and Andy, you've got good contacts in Premier League scouting and stuff. Mm. They talked a lot about what scouts are looking for in young players. And in actual fact, they're not. None of these scouts are short of really talented 16-year-old players. They're everywhere. Yeah. But what it comes down to is getting to know the player, their mentality, how hard they work, how intelligent they are, what they want to achieve out of life, what their upbringing is like, all that kind of stuff. And Declan Rice just smacks of someone who is training ground, mm-hmm. works his balls mm-hmm. off all the time. And that's ultimately why he'll succeed, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah, well, I think there was a piece recently about some England players that went to independent schools and were actually... Because often, quite oddly... the middle classes and all that kind of stuff have been quite pushed to one side.
That's right, absolutely. Yeah.
It's a weird thing to say that all the poor middle classes, but actually in a footballing context, there have actually been sort of...
Simon Cooper talks about it a lot. So if England, this is back in the day.
And why England lose.
If England want to embrace international success, they need to embrace the middle class. And I'll tell you, a good example of that is Patrick Bamford. Mm-hmm. He gets loads of stick on Twitter for being posh and all this other stuff. Yeah, he deals with it quite well. But, I mean, ultimately, there's definitely an inverted snobbery involved.
Sure, there absolutely is. But without even someone like Frank Lampard, now I know he's, you know, you wouldn't call him archetypal middle class, you know, and whatnot.
But he was intelligent.
I heard him speaking again the other day, and I just thought to myself, more about what you said about Chelsea and potentially, you know, Lampard going the future. And I thought, he really has got, so far, he's got the makings of could be a really good manager. Just the intelligence, the way he talks tactically, the way he talks about other things, the way he deals with certain players. You know, certainly he talks a very good game.
Would you not argue that he wasn't middle class in that, like, his dad was a lauded footballer? No, but you know what I mean. Like,
sure, but it's social mobility.
It's the nouveau riche. It's the nouveau riche, my friend.
Absolutely,
he's no Scotty Cannon.
I wouldn't have thought so.
That's a niche one. Though.
It is very niche.
But basically, there's a famous clip of Frank Lampard as a kid.
Yes.
And Harry Redknapp's having to defend him to a fan.
To
group.
A fan, yeah.
And the fan stands up and says, "Why are you playing Frank Lampard Jr., as he was then?
Yes.
When you can be playing Scotty Cannon?" And Redknapp goes mad.
To be fair, well, Redknapp, he was correct.
Yeah.
But he's going right to the top.
It's awkward.
He'd go right to the top.
Frank to be sat there.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was. But it was fair enough on Redknapp to defend him like that.
I've got no beef with Scotty Cannon, by the way.
No, nobody has. Nobody has. But Luke,
no one knows who he is.
While you're there, give us our best bet with Bet365.
Joshua Gibson from Devon.
No.
He says, "Hello, Ramblers. I would like to throw my name in for the best bet. Now, we know that Brendan Rodgers' first game wasn't the best result, but it was...
okay.
But something that did come out of it was Vardy getting his scoring boots back on. Now, I'm sure it's no coincidence and he must be inspired by the new manager." I think I'll probably go along with that.
And also, he had a really horrible head injury about 5 minutes
in, didn't he? That's true. Which angered him.
Angered him.
Therefore, I'd like my best bet to be that Vardy will score at any time against Fulham.
Like it, yeah.
The most porous defence
in the
world.
I'm going to say that's a safe bet.
At 11 to 10. So £50 with Bet365 returns £105. That's from Joshua. Yeah, Jamie Vardy to score any time against the world's worst defensive unit is indeed 11 to 10. So £50 returns £105 with all proceeds going to Prostate Cancer UK. You must be aged 18 or over to gamble. And for more information, begambleaware.org. Don't forget to gamble responsibly. Pete.
Okay, then.
And now. So, the heat's on, and the time is right. It's time for you, for you to play the game. Cause people are coming, everyone's trying to be the best that they can. To reach for the sky where the stakes are so high, we're all going for gold.
Gold.
It's the show that occasionally needs an introduction. It's Glowing for Gold. I've got a mystery footballer this week chosen by someone calling themselves Val Venus, who was a wrestler. He's not, it's a nom de plume, if you will. First clue, guys. I was born in São Bernardo do Campo, Brazil, on the 20th of August, 1982.
Stop. Robinho.
Incorrect.
Stop. Adriano.
Incorrect, baby. Mm. Plenty to choose from.
Does he want to guess?
Stop. Maicon.
Incorrect. I started my career at Barcelona.
Stop.
Good start.
Sonny Anderson.
Incorrect.
No, he didn't. He's really old. I'm not talking about.
I made my international debut age 21, but I didn't play international football again until I was 29. This
stop.
Time.
Go on. Go. Sorry, sorry.
No, you said
all
stop.
Right. Marcos Senna.
Incorrect.
Good guess.
Nice. I will start the clue again. I made my international debut age 21, but I didn't play international football again until I was 29, this time for a different country.
Stop. Deco.
Incorrect.
Ah, no, yeah, you've opened it up there, Jim.
You've opened it up there.
Yeah.
I've been managed by Carlo Ancelotti, Antonio Conte, and Rafa Benitez.
Stop. Is it a Maori?
Incorrect. I've won.
You're going very quickly, Pete.
You've got to get in. Got to get in.
Aye,
there.
Come on.
If someone says stop, you got to stop. Though.
Yeah, Jim said stop, didn't you?
I did.
Go on then.
Well, said stop.
No, sorry.
No one
say.
Said
oh, no,
stop.
I thought
no
Jim
one said stop.
Oh, stop. But can I stop?
Can I just say, after 3 years, this game is still an absolute shambles.
Yeah.
It's not a shambles. I'm just moving on.
Which clue?
Because you need time to think about them.
Yeah, you said a clue about Conte and
Benitez and Ancelotti.
So can I stop on that one?
Yeah, you can. You can. Yes. I've already done it.
Alex.
Incorrect.
The Chelsea defender.
Yeah, that's a really
good guess. Yeah.
I think he did. I don't think he played for any other country.
Go on.
Oh, you want me to go now? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Such a petty point.
Sorry.
Yeah. Go on.
Yeah. Sorry, the jaywalker's allowed to go now, is it?
Carry on.
I was on trial.
Stop. Thiago Motta. Play the
Marcus.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, try and take me on.
it's your first one for a while, by the way.
Is, yeah.
You're going too fast if I hear that one more time from a lady.
Or a man.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, I've got it now. I thought, shall I wait for him to... No, I'll get in.
I was on trial at Luke's beloved Portsmouth in 2008. Just 2 years later, I won the Champions League.
I didn't know that.
Wow.
And I have a runners-up medal in the European Championships.
No better than we've already got.
Incredible. Steve Cotterill was around.
Oh, Cottrell. Where's Cottrell? What's he doing at
Cottrell
the moment?
Wasn't. 2008 was Redknapp.
What's Cottrell doing at the moment?
Cottrell. I don't know. I'll check.
Yeah, have a little look.
You do your outro, I'll check.
You don't like Steve Cottrell, do you?
No, you do your outro.
I like him. I met him once. Very enthusiastic man. He's only human.
last season managing Birmingham City. After 5 months in the post, during which the team remained in and around the relegation zone, and after a fifth successive league defeat, performance affected at least in part by a series of injuries and boardroom politics, Steve Cotterill was dismissed on the 3rd of March 2018. A year ago now, that is.
Yeah.
Don't know what he's been doing since.
He's available for work.
I was getting mixed up with Graham Wesley. And which is the one that sent a lot of texts
Wesley.
To his mates,
Wesley.
His players, saying that the building was under attack?
Graham Wesley.
Okay, right, fine. I don't want
was under attack?
The whole, even it's something like, it's going to sound ridiculous, right? But we covered it on the show at the time. It's definitely worth revisiting. Graham Wesley was managing a team, I forget which one.
Yeah.
They were at a hotel for the away game.
I'm going to say Stevenage.
And, it might have been. And he sent a lot of texts to his players as a joke, in the middle of the night or whatever, saying that the building was under attack.
Wow.
But I have to stress that Steve Cotterill was nothing to do with that.
Yeah, I think
was the building under attack?
No.
Oh.
Are you sure it was under attack? You sent a load of funny texts, wasn't that?
Funny text to Steve Cotterill. Get out of here.
All right, let's go before we talk more nonsense. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble Preview Show.
It was Preston North End.
For the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Bet365. It's been a pleasure. Luke Moore, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pete Donaldson.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jimmy Campbell.
Thank you,
listeners. See you on Monday.
This was a Radio Staccato production.
Oh, actually, what he did is he sent the players the team lineup by text at 2 a.m. the night before. Don't know where I got the building under attack from. Obviously, completely made that up.
Brain is under attack.
But I'm happy to set the record straight, Graham, and I hope you're well.
Yeah.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.